Ladies and gentlemen, as Chancellor of the Berkeley campus, I have the honor of extending a cordial welcome to all of you on this unique occasion. It is both unique and historic. As you are aware, His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, is the first Dalai Lama ever to visit the United States.
Chancellor Boker, President Welch, and friends. I'm very happy to have the opportunity of seeing around the university. Earlier, I went to the Graduate Theological Union, then saw a Tibetan exhibit in the library, and then I was taken to the laboratory. And I would like to thank you for the opportunity of being with you right now.
So, now, I'm very happy to be here among people who are taking keen interest about Tibet and Tibetan Buddhism. I think some of them, some of you may know better than me, I think. So, in any case, I mean, you are showing keen interest, so I'm very happy. Now, this present the world, due to the material progress, now we are much closer to each other, not only economy fields, but in culture and faith. In this field also, we are now much closer to each other. So, and this is something, good opportunity to learn from each other. With that, we can develop a real, understand to each other. And with that, we can respect to each other, and from that, we can make a common effort to what we call the beneficial of humankind. That is the basic idea, that is the basic aim. The main purpose of all religion is for, I think, humanity, benefit of mankind. As like, I always feel like human. In order to survive our, you see, human physical, we have many variety of, you see, food, dishes, this sort of thing. But nobody quarrel. This food or that food, you see. I mean, everybody accept that all kinds of food are something. I mean, the main aim or main purpose is fulfill our stomach and a good taste and something like that. So you see. And they, when we talk about religion, different dharma, different religion, it is something like a food, food for spiritual or food for mind. So there are variety. It is better, more different religion or different philosophy. It's anyway, it is something better to have variety. Then we can choose many things. And due to disposition, different disposition. For a certain case, for a certain person, the certain teaching are more suitable, more useful, more effective. So, on this world, what you call the different religion and different things, it is very, I feel very lucky, very fortunate. Now, basic thing, as I mentioned, you see here, it is very essential or absolutely necessary to make clear recognition of the aim. The each religious aim, basically, I think, the service, better service for humankind. So here, I always believe and speak to other people that it is important to think how to contribute through each individual's philosophy and religion to contribute to the human society. How to solve these current problems through our own teaching, either individually or common effort or individual effort. So now, if here I think something here, this is quite very beautiful. The things that behind the people of different religious traditions are more important than those that separate them. That's very nice.
If we look from the point of view of the similarities among different religions, you find,
as I mentioned earlier, then we can make a common effort. If we think that from the within the sun is tabina.
If we look at it, from the differences,
see, if we kasore tunzu busu da hojik tane in mitin da tabina, ay nazo argument sa hojik.
If we look at things with a narrow mind and from the different points of view, then there's only going to be basis for arguments.
Endless argument, no result, just argument to criticize to each other, that's useless. So you see, it is much better to think or to make a common effort on the basis of, you see, common aim and common motivation. The motivation is love, compassion. All religion, the main message is the compassion, love, sense of brotherhood, sisterhood, that sort of thing. So now I'm going to say something about Tibetan Buddhism or Buddhism in general. Patelia Kasachuti. Nabasagyeva and Chalia, any Shize Tom Ya Layalia, any Mashiko subject Chilus name is Tom Nolu Manguyarity, Yene, such a share, you know.
There are many different ways in which the basic structure of Buddhism can be set, but from one of the more important points of view, the basis is the two truths, and in dependence on these there are the two paths of method and wisdom. And as a fruit of practicing those paths, there are the two bodies of a Buddha. Those two bodies are the form body for the sake of others, and the truth body, which is a fulfillment of one's own aims. There is no way to posit, in Buddhism, there is no Buddha who was always a Buddha forever. Buddhas are people like ourselves who originally had defilements and stage by stage removed those defilements to the point where they attained all good attributes and removed all faults. And the root that makes this possible is the fact that the mind, that the nature of the mind is of mere illumination and knowing.
Chi yu
Mind is something that has the capacity of appearing in the aspect of whatever appears to, whatever casts its aspect to it, whatever is reflected to it, and has a nature of mere illumination or clarity and knowing. This mind disintegrates moment by moment.
It
has many different types of causes, a substantial cause and cooperative conditions, but in terms of the substantial cause, that which causes a mind to be produced as an entity capable of experiencing objects is a result of its immediately preceding condition, and that condition itself must be something that has a nature of being just and of being just illuminating and knowing. An entity that has as its nature mere illumination and knowing cannot be produced from external elements which Thus the external elements cannot act as the substantial cause of internal consciousness. And the external elements cannot be produced by an internal consciousness as well. Thus in this way there is no way but to posit that the continuum of the mind, the continuum of this entity of illumination and knowing, has no beginning at all. There's no beginning can be posited, and no end can be posited either. However, beginnings and ends of specific types of minds can indeed be posited. But then there are some consciousnesses, some specific consciousnesses, with respect to which a beginning to their continuum cannot be posited, but an end can be. Now, with regard to transforming the mind, that which causes the class of faulty minds is the factor of obscuration. Therefore, in order to remove this ignorance or obscuration with respect to the nature of things, it is necessary to generate knowledge of the nature of phenomena. In order to generate such a consciousness which knows the nature of phenomena, it's necessary to understand those things which are to be known. With regard to what is to be known, there are two statuses or two types. One is the merely appearing conventional phenomena, and the other is the nature or deep status of those phenomena.
지데 탕에 쥐레 러이 니아지리 지슈디 타두 쥐레 러이 니아지시야
The one is found by a consciousness distinguishing conventionalities, whereas the other is found or known by a consciousness distinguishing the ultimate. The first is called the conventional truths, and the latter are called ultimate truths. Doctrines of the two truths are taught in non-Buddhist systems, as well as in various ways by the various Buddhist systems. However, the way that they posit these two truths is different. In connection with the two truths in the Yogacara or Chittamatra system, there is an explanation of the three natures. The other powered natures or dependent natures, the imaginary natures, and final natures. Now the final or thoroughly established natures, I will explain about the final or thoroughly established natures, which are the emptinesses of the, the dependent natures are empty of the imaginary natures, and these emptinesses are the thoroughly established natures. Now, in the Chittamatra system, and with respect to this topic of imaginary natures, it is asserted that the consciousness which comprehends an object is of the same entity as that object which it comprehends. Now, objects which are different entities from objects which are imagined to be different entities, the existence of an object which is an entity external to the consciousness perceiving it is called self, and the absence of that self is called selflessness, and the emptiness of such existence is called emptiness. Therefore, they explain that all phenomena are included within the entity of the mind. Now, in the Madhyamaka system, there are several different explanations of the two truths, dependent on the interpretations by different scholars. But here I will explain that of the Master Buddhapalita. Buddhapalita did not accept the Chittamatran assertion that objects are of the same nature or entity as the consciousness that perceives them. Even though he asserted that these phenomena such as form, sounds, and so forth are established as different entities from the consciousness that perceives them, he asserted that these phenomena are without inherent or true existence. Now what does truthlessness, what does the absence of true existence or truthlessness mean in this Madhyamaka system of Buddhapalata? First of all, if I explain the opposite,
마란조리야 최신 최강만하냐 아니 유딩 되네 두었다 보시 나도는 그야.
No matter what phenomenon appears to our minds, it appears as if it exists objectively right there in and of itself.
뒤에디 유딩네 예가 딱 능기야래 나는 신기 예다 메디 다 자주 하시면이나 다 자가 하시면이나.
Now, phenomena appear to exist objectively in and of themselves, but if we investigate or analyze to see whether they do exist objectively in the manner in which they appear, we cannot find them under analysis. When we divide an object into its parts, then we cannot find the whole. And we don't accept that there is any phenomenon which is partless. There isn't any form which cannot be divided into parts which are its respective directions. For instance, even when we consider the quarks, that comprise the protons in a nucleus, they occupy a certain place and thus have parts in terms of the directions. Vasubandhu in his 30 stanzas sets forth many different analyses with respect to showing how any physical particle must have parts, these being its various directions. Well, there's no... Therefore, proving or establishing that there is nothing that is partless.
Now what
Vasubandhu concludes from proving that there is no phenomenon which is partless is that there are no external objects. In other words, by not finding a partless particle under analysis, he concludes that it doesn't, that external particles don't exist. However, in the Madhyamaka system that I'm speaking about now, they assert that the non-finding of such particles under analysis doesn't mean, or isn't because these particles don't exist, because external particles don't exist, but because they don't inherently exist or truly exist as they appear to. The fact that phenomena cannot be found under analysis is a sign that they are truthless. It's not that they don't exist, because it's obvious that they exist since there is help and harm that comes from them. Therefore, phenomena are empty of existing in the way in which they appear. Because phenomena are empty of existing in the solid manner in which they appear, all phenomena are abide. Abide as entities that have a nature of being empty of existing in this manner in which they appear. For instance, if we take this lectern as an example, without analysis and investigation, we're using it. And there is a consciousness which, without analysis, conventionally considers the table to exist. And it is a consciousness that is distinguishing a conventional phenomenon. And this mere table, which is found or distinguished by such a consciousness, is a conventional truth. But if one is not satisfied with the mere appearance of the table, but searches to find what the table is, if one searches to find what it is, then one cannot find it. Once one separates out all the qualities of color and so forth, there isn't any table left which is the basis then of those qualities. Therefore, this is a type of consciousness that is not satisfied with the mere appearance of the lectern, but is searching to find out what is the object designated. And what does this consciousness find when it searches for the table? It finds the non-finding of the table. On another is contradictory. They are a dichotomy such that if something is not the one, it must be the other. That if something exists and it is not established as the one, then it necessarily must be the other. For instance, human and non-human. Now, although, for instance, human and horse are contradictory, they are not a dichotomy. However, human and non-human are a dichotomy. There is nothing that exists that is in any third category.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, since the dependent and the independent are a dichotomy, whatever is dependent is necessarily empty of independence. When such an emptiness appears to the mind, first of all, there's the object which is comprehended by such a consciousness, the emptiness. Now going backwards, the objects comprehended are all included within the two truths. And there are many different consciousnesses which comprehend them. In general, with respect to consciousnesses that comprehend objects, there are those that comprehend objects without depending on signs or reasons, with just through the manifestation of the object, and they directly realize it. What does this consciousness find when it searches for the table? It finds the non-finding of the table. And when one is searching with the lectern as the substratum, this non-finding of the lectern is the nature then, becomes the nature of the lectern. And since this is the a quality of the object and the ultimate quality of the object, it is the final status or mode of being or mode of subsistence of the object. Therefore, when Buddhapalita set forth this doctrine of emptiness, he was not setting forth a doctrine that phenomena are empty of the ability to perform functions. Rather, he was indicating that phenomena are dependent arisings and therefore are empty of inherent existence. To be dependent on another and not to be dependent on another is contradictory. They are a dichotomy such that if something is not the one, it must be the other. That if something exists and it is not established as the one, then it necessarily must be the other. For instance, human and non-human. Now, although, for instance, human and horse are contradictory, they are not a dichotomy. However, human and non-human are a dichotomy. There is nothing that exists that is in any third category. Therefore, since the dependent and the independent are a dichotomy, whatever is dependent is necessarily empty of independence. When such an emptiness appears to the mind, first of all, there's the object which is comprehended by such a consciousness, the emptiness. Now going backwards, the Objects comprehended are all included within the two truths. And there are many different consciousnesses which comprehend them. In general, with respect to consciousnesses that comprehend objects, there are those that comprehend objects without depending on signs or reasons, with just through the manifestation of the object, and they directly realize it. And there are other consciousnesses which do not realize the objects in that way, but in dependence upon a sign or reason whereby that object is comprehended. In the text of Dharmakirti, he sets forth three main divisions of signs, these being effect signs, nature signs, and signs of non-observation.
And with
respect to signs of non-observation, there are two types, those involved with the non-appearing and those involved with the appearing. For signs that prove emptiness, we are mainly concerned with signs of non-observation, which are cases of the non-observation of something that would be suitable to appear if it did exist. In order to overcome the one-pointed misconception of an object, we use consequences or prasanga. In any case, whether it is through a correct sign or through a consequence, when through reflection on it, one ascertains the emptiness or non-inherent existence of an object. One realizes this non-inherent existence, which is an ultimate truth, and within the division of phenomena into negative phenomena and positive phenomena is a negative phenomena. For instance, the word emptiness itself is a negative word, but even such a word as dharmata or reality, although it is not itself a negative term, when its meaning appears to the mind, it must appear by way of a negative root. In other words, for it to appear to the mind, one must eliminate explicitly an object of negation. With respect to negative phenomena, these being the ones that must appear to the mind through a negative root, or in other words, the explicit negation of some object of negation, there are two types, those that imply something in their place and those that do not. And thus there's the division into affirming and non-affirming negatives. When an ultimate truth appears to the mind, it appears in such a manner that it does not imply any other phenomenon in its place. Therefore, an ultimate truth is posited as a non-affirming negative.
And
Now, for a mind that's realizing emptiness then, all that appears to the mind is this mere negative of inherent existence, and the mode of apprehension of the mind is just the ascertainment of the total absence of inherent existence. And as long as one can stay with that negative, and that mere vacuity, during the length of that time, all that appears to the mind is this mere vacuity. When one develops experience with respect to this, then after the session of meditative equipoise on emptiness, when phenomena again appear to one's mind, one has strong ascertainment that even though these phenomena appear to inherently exist, they are empty of such inherent existence, whereby phenomena appear to be like illusions. Since it is the case that desire, hatred, and so forth are produced with the assistance since they are produced with the assistance of the conception of inherent existence, when one understands emptiness and subsequently views phenomena as like illusions, this prevents the generation of the conception of inherent existence, whereby one becomes able to control these afflictive states of mind. And also other states of mind, such as virtuous ones, are not produced in dependence upon the conception of inherent existence. Therefore, this understanding of phenomena as like illusions does not harm the generation of salutary states of mind, even though it harms the generation of the opposite side. Thus, in dependence on ultimate truths, one develops wisdom, and in dependence on conventional truths, one develops the factors of method, such as compassion, kindness, altruism, and so forth. And these two, one must proceed on the path with these two in union. Thus, this is the path of the union of wisdom and method. Now, in order to enhance the wisdom consciousness, it's not sufficient merely to have a wisdom consciousness arisen from hearing. Rather, one must increase it through the stages of thinking and meditation. What one needs is a wisdom consciousness consciousness which is a state arisen from meditation and observing emptiness, which is a meditative stabilization that is a union of calm abiding and special insight. And in Tantra, there are many special practices set forth that enhance the development of such a consciousness.
Hmm.
the main of these is a
다시 한번 해 걸어 올립니다.
is an apprehension of a mandala circle which comprises the vast, as well as a consciousness, a wisdom consciousness, which simultaneously understands the profound empty nature of phenomena, these two factors being included within one yogic consciousness. And then with respect to the most profound of all techniques for such a yoga, there is the generation of many subtler levels of consciousness. As much as one is capable of using subtler levels of consciousness in a virtuous way, so much stronger does one's virtuous activity become. As the imprint or result of practicing this yoga, in which in one consciousness one observes or imagines a divine mandala, and at the same time realizes the emptiness of inherent existence of all of the factors, one generates the two bodies, the form body being the imprint of the imagination of the divine circle and so forth, the factors of method, and the truth body being the imprint or result of the wisdom consciousness realizing emptiness. Now the root or foundation of the capacity of being able to develop these two bodies of a Buddha, the form and truth bodies, is the very subtle inner air and consciousness which we have in our continuums now. And this is called the Buddha nature or Tathagata essence. That probably is enough.
Yeah, that was the question you made.
Your
any question?
There's only about 10 minutes left.
So,
When you're observing the void,
yes.
While observing the void and meditating, this other thing happens, like the emergence of the sattvic quality of mind.
When you're observing?
While observing the void in meditation, this other quality emerges in the mind, the sattvic quality. How does this fit into your scheme of understanding?
Where
does that come from?
Sattvic quality?
The bliss.
And what was the question about the bliss?
Where does this bliss come from while observing the void?
There is a practice of using bliss in order to generate a subtler consciousness, in order to use it to realize emptiness. This is because when the mind is blissful, the coarser types of consciousnesses cease.
冬人永远都在呢，年末了。但呢，等下冬人第二吃苦，但那年时啊的，早些时候根本尊重的，啊，兄弟根本奉养的，等你底下就行了。Now
it's important to make this differentiation. Today I've been talking about the two truths from the point of view of the explanation that's given by Nagarjuna in his precious, in his fundamental treatise on the Middle Way.
但一天呢，谈谈谈吧，是啊的，嗯，谈谈谈，主要谈谈，落谈谈，等等这样。However,
in Maitreya's treatise called The Differentiation of Middle Way and Extremes, he sets forth a mental ultimate, an objective ultimate, and a practical ultimate.
大家们心里，上帝的根本定义没得写的。And
similarly, also in
大家们心里，中国根本没得写的。And
again, in the Kalachakra Tantra, there is a different explanation of the two truths.
大家们心，按照早先人路的定义写用的没得写。Similarly,
also when the two truths are explained in accordance with the system of Dzogchen, there is again another explanation. Therefore, it's necessary to determine in discussing or interpreting this topic from which direction one is doing the interpretation and then set up one's sources.
Now,